pick up where we left off yesterday. Just a little bit about the Tosefta. The Gemara refers to a Tosefta and it's often assumed officially to be the Brisis of Rab Oshia and Rab Chia. And the Gemara is a principle that Kol Masnisa Delomismi Be Rab Chia Be Rab Oshia is Lada Bar Samcha. Sometimes the Gemara will say Uman Leimalan De Mitaretz Tahi Demo Mishabesh Tahi. Who says it's Mituratz, it's straight? Maybe it's a Brisa that's an error. So there was a notion that there were a lot of Brises that floated around, but some of them were official, which would be things that didn't make it into the Mishnah but were authoritative, with all sorts of rules that go with them. Right? In other words, the rules of how you paskin. When you have a Stam Mishnah, you paskin like a Stam Mishnah. But if you have a Stam Mishnah and later there's a Machlokas in the same Masechta, Stam V'Yachakach Machlokas. So you don't paskin like the Stam Mishnah. But if it's a Stam in the Mishnah and a Machlokas in the Braisa, that's a different story. Okay, but nonetheless, the Tosefta is considered authoritative. The Braises were considered authoritative, provided that there was an authoritative Braisa. Now, the word Baraisa, correctly pronounced that way, means outside, chutz, bar. Bar means outside. When they talk about a chomesh min legav and a chomesh min labar, chomesh from the inside, we take a chomesh min labar. A fifth of 100 is, Noam? 5. That you gave me a chomesh milagav, but when we say you have to be most of a chomesh, it's 25, because it's a chomesh milabar. It's from the total, sum total. That's what it means milagav. The Gemara in the fourth paragraph of Bamitzia has the shayla, the chomesh milagav, the chomesh milabar, and we pass in the chomesh milabar. So baraisa means something that was outside. It wasn't incorporated into the Mishnah, but it was still considered authoritative. Now, it happens to be an analysis of what we have in our Tosefta makes it very clear that it's not. This was not exactly there. It doesn't line up with what the Gemara might have had. We don't have the Gemara's Tosefta. We have many brises that might be attributed to Rabbi Chiya Oshia, but it's clear that you have those attributed to Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia, which are not in our Tosefta, and those things that are in Tosefta that conflict with things that they said, and so on and so forth. But the Tosefta, what we have is what we have. It's some collection of brises, probably composed in the early 3rd century, even if it's not the exact same collection that they refer to as the Tosefta. One last note about the general enterprise of the Tosefta and Brises in general. Amoraim did not always know all of the Brises. The assumption is that Amoraim knew all the Mishnayos. You'll never find, to the best of my knowledge in Chas, where the Gemara says that the Amora never heard the Mishnah. But you will find the expression, Brisa lo shemiyale. You hadn't heard the Brisa? Okay. Now, speaking about our Tosefta, so given it's true for the Yerushalmi as well, the Tosefta was not a subject of popular study. As you might imagine, what they studied in Bavel was, and later in Europe mostly, was the Talmud Bavli. So if the Tosefta had the Zechus, or some version of that Braisa had the Zechus to make it into the Bavli, it had good mazel. If not, not. There's only one complete manuscript of the Tosefta, and that is Ksav Yad Vienna. It's a 13th century manuscript. In the mid to late 1900s, Rav Shlomo Zuckermandel, who's a German Rav, discovered in a library in Erfurt, guess which manuscript? Ksav Yad Erfurt. What a coincidence. And that was a joke. It's called Ksav Yad Erfurt because it was in the library of Erfurt. It wasn't written necessarily in Erfurt. Right, Ksav Yad Leningrad, the famous codex of the complete Masoretic codex, was not written in Leningrad. It's in the library in Leningrad. Ksav Yad Leningrad was most certainly written in Eretz Yisrael, like the Aleppo codex, which wasn't written in Aleppo. It was written in Tiberias or something like that. But we call manuscripts by the name of the library in which they're located. So Ksav Yad Erfurt is actually an earlier manuscript. It's 12th century. Rav Zuckermandel discovered this and thought he had, discovered the greatest thing ever, and he published it. It was republished, I think, around 1970 by Lieberman with some corrections. It's a very useful work. Zuckermandel decided that since he found this manuscript that he thought this was special, he would make this the basis of his critical edition. The Zucker Mandel, if you're interested, Celis can send you a link to it, to a PDF of it. And Zucker Mandel's Tosefta basically is mostly text. There's very little on the bottom, but he gives you Shinui Nischos. He only uses three textual witnesses, Xavier Erfurt, Vienna, and the Fuss Rishon, the first printing of the Tosefta, which was done along with the first printing of the Rif in, I believe, the 1520s in Venice. He decided to make Saviad Erfurt the base of his text until you get to Zvachim, like the first few prakim of Zvachim, we don't have any more Saviad Erfurt, so he was forced to use Vienna. Lieberman thought otherwise, as I may have mentioned yesterday, that Vienna was actually a better manuscript, even though it's essentially, you know, it's a sometime later. Xavier Erfurt shows greater tendencies of having been edited towards the Babli. Not systematically, but a little bit. And then there's one other manuscript. There's only one other manuscript, Saviad London, which is a 15th century manuscript, relatively late, and I believe it's only on Seder Moed. So we happen to be learning Sukkah, which is in Seder Moed, so we have a third manuscript of the Tosefta, and I lined those four up on top. So let me start. So that basically, there's a lot of stuff, research that's been done on Tosefta. If you're interested, you can come to me. I'll give you a little bibliography. Perhaps one of the most interesting things about Tosefta, at least to my mind, is the claim by some scholars, which may have some merit, that sometimes the Tosefta actually preserves an original form of the Mishnah. And the Mishnah, in other words, the Brises, the Mishnayos existed before Rebbe. That's very clear. And Rebbe didn't write the Mishnayos, or he didn't write all of them for sure. Many of them, he had collections that came from before him. And there, sometimes the Tosefta may preserve a version of the Mishnah that may have existed before Rebbe, and the Mishnah is an edited version. If you are particularly interested in exploring Tosefta, so I said, I'll give you some bibliography. I also have, I'm happy to share with you, I know where it is. In my dissertation, when I did the Tosefta videos, that wasn't the main focus. I did sort of an introduction just outlining the various kinds of comments. I don't know, some like 6, 8, 10 different types of things, of comments that you'll find in the Tosefta, in terms of the relationship of the Tosefta to the Mishnah, because that's one of the crucial questions. Okay, anyway, that's enough about Tosefta. So let me start by asking, having looked at the different versions of the Tosefta, first question is, would you say there are any significant differences between the four versions, between the three manuscripts and the Fuss Rishon of the Tosefta? Would you say there are any significant differences in terms of meaning? Alter? I ask significant differences in meaning. It's a difference in how you formulate Eino Chayev or Pater. Yes.
No.
So it's a strange language. It is a very odd formulation. You know, women are not commanded on the mitzvahs, but that obviously doesn't mean that. It means mitzvah sukkah. Right? That's all it means. So yes, it does, by the way, match up. Where else do you see that type of a formulation? What? No. Yes, that's what we say, the Nachayev mitzvahs, but where is that one manuscript of the Tosefta? In the Yushalmi, right. In other words, the Yushalmi's version in that one respect looks a little like the London manuscript. All right, any significant differences between different versions of the Tosefta as found in the Kisveyad? Avra?
Some say Yoter Master Mama.
So that might be an argument, but is that really the case?
It says, well, in Vilna it doesn't say that. It says that I talk about Master Mama, as opposed to, say...
I would just say, the end is missing the word Yoser, but I don't think it matters. It means the same thing. There is a very crucial question, which you might have gotten to in the Gemara in Erevin, some of you, which is, does the schach have to be within 20 amos, or it can't be more than 20 amos above? In other words, how much can the airspace measured from floor to roof, how much can that be? The maskana of the Bavli is what? And it's the simple reading of the Mishnah as well. What is 20 amos? Is 20 amos, are you allowed to have a gap of 20 amos and no more, or does the schach actually have to be below the 20 amos mark? Yehuda?
I think it's the airspace can be 20 amos.
The airspace can be no more than 20 amos, but it can be 20 amos. That is the maskana of Rava in the sugya in Erevin, and it actually, in some ways, everybody seems to accept it. For Rava in particular, it seems to me to be an obvious conclusion. But anyway, we'll come back to that when we get to Erufin. So the answer to the question, my answer to the question is, I don't think there are any significant differences. There are a few minor differences. You can pleple if you like and try to claim, oh, you see a big difference. Probably the most substantive difference I can find, but I don't think it's significant, is Yeshenim versus Shuriyan. Right? What is the word, by the way, Shuriyan mean? Yeah, it's a very interesting feature of the Hebrew language. If you look at the good kisveyad of the first Mishnah Bava Metzia, so when they talk about two people with a donkey, they don't say actually rochven al hamor. They may say, if I'm not mistaken, they may say rechuven. English does not have this. This it's a beautiful thing about the Hebrew language. What is the difference between rochev and rachuv? It's a passive participle, but the question is, it's hard to capture in English in a normal word. So if I were making up a word, if rochev were riding, so rachuv would be enridden. It means being in a state of riding. To be shore is to dwell. To be sharui is in a state of dwelling. So that's true. But there's something else going on here. If you had to pick, shruyim is a Hebrew word you recognize, but it really has a different Hebrew equivalent because it's really an Aramaic root. I don't know. I don't know if the word shoreh appears anywhere in biblical Hebrew. If it doesn't, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Sharui or shoreh is actually the equivalent of a very common Hebrew word, especially in the Eretz Yisrael Targumim. I think we spoke about this in the first or second shir maybe, about Midrash Halacha. What word in Hebrew is typically translated by the Targumim of Eretz Yisrael with the word shirah?
Yashav.
In Unklus, Yashav as a general rule is translated as Yasav, just the cognate. It doesn't mean whether it means to dwell or to sit. But in Targum Neofiti, which is the pure Eretz Yisrael Targum, the word Yashav, if it means to physically to sit, then it means it's Yasav. If it means to live, then it's Shira. You look in the Pasuk on Vayeshev Be'eretz Midyan, Vayeshev Ala Be'er. I didn't check, but I'm pretty sure you'll get V'yasev, Ushra, Be'ara de Midyan, V'yasev Al Be'ra. Right? Because the first one means to dwell in the land of Midyan, the second one means actually to sit on or by the Be'er. So the truth is that the expression Shuyim Besocha really means, in Hebrew, Yoshvim Besocha. So you have, it's interesting that you have this Girs of Yeshenim. What's the difference between Yeshiva Besukha and Yeshena Besukha? No?
Maybe there's no mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah.
There certainly is a mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah. One of the interesting things the Gemara will say, that you're allowed to be ochel achilas arai outside the sukkah. But Shena always is considered a keva for the purposes of sukkah. Okay. Anyway, fine. So the bottom line is, there aren't any significant differences. If you want to give a drasha about whether or not the rabbis were a unified group or not, so Xaviar Erfurt believes that they were a unified group. They worked as one, and the other three versions say that they have lone wolves amongst them, right? Because in those other three, it's V'hayu Zekeinu V'chachzim V'yotzim Etzla, V'la'omar Echad Mehem Davar. Not even one. So to step out to say something. In Erfurt, it's below Amru Ladava, as if they are a collective group. It's nice if you want to give a drasha. I wouldn't choose to give a drasha off Neschaus and the Tosefta. There's an important message. These are two issues to discuss, but I would not use this as my drasha-based text, frankly. There are three formulations about a woman's relationship to the mitzvah sukkah. The isha ein chayeves besukkah, the isha betur ben asukkah, the ein isha chayeves besukkah or b'mitzvos. The normal formulation is for ein isha chayeves. The isha ein chayeves is a strange formulation. It should have been the isha ein no chayeves if you were going to do that. Whatever. The truth is that might have been the best formulation might have been the isha b'nei she isha, the isha ein chayeves besukkah. But somebody left off that hey. Ptur min asukkah means the same thing. I don't think there's anything significant here. Alter?
Can you say that like this? There is a difference in patur and chayev.
Between Pater and Eino Chayev?
Eino Chayev, yeah. Pater is you kind of were Chayev. Like,
no, it's not true.
Some sort of,
yeah. No, I don't think that's true. Pater can be used sometimes after an act performed and you want to know whether you're still Chayev in Mitzvah or Pater. It's true, but I don't think it has only that valence. I think, you know, they'll use pater by people who are pater meikara also. If anybody can actually find out, I'd be curious to know what the origin of that word peites reish is. I'm pretty sure it doesn't exist with this meaning in biblical Hebrew. I mean, it exists in Aramaic. What does the word patur mean actually in Aramaic or Hebrew? Actually, we say exem, but what?
Free.
To dismiss, right? The translation of tishalchenu chav shemeirach is tiftarine, right? You dismiss someone. What is one of the three Aramaic titles for a get? There are three different ways we refer to a get in a get, and each one is one of the three targumim on Sefer Krisos. There's an igeres shivukin, there is a something teruchin, and then there is get piturin. Get piturin, in other words, he dismisses his wife. That's what it means. It means to dismiss. So patur means if you were obligated something, you know, now you're dismissed.
So Petra Chamor is that which is dismissed from the Chamor?
I don't know that they're related at all. In other words, Chazal do use that term. I don't know if they're actually related or not. That might be. So there's a case of the root. But the Targumim translate Petras Korechem as Pasach Kovalda. It's opening. So I don't know that they are related at all. It's possible. I haven't looked. Okay. I didn't think about the use of Petra, but I think that might be the, it's possible it's the only usage. Somebody will go search that and tell me no, I'm wrong. Okay. Ksav Yad Vienna is missing the word beload. I don't think that's significant. And I think the Yoser is not significant. It means the same thing. All right, so now when we look at the, firstly, the comparison of Vienna to the Tefus Vilna. So the Tefus Vilna here is based upon a transcription of Yehuda reading me the Tosefta as I typed it in, so hopefully I got it right. And if you look at the reason why I put the Tefus Vilna here, which is the Tosefta printed in the back of your Gemara, is because the Tosefta printed in the back of your Gemara has often been edited with the insertion of brackets to match typically a brisa found in the Bavli. So one of you asking about the Gra, when the Gra makes some suggested emendation in the Tosefta, where's he getting it from? The answer is he's leveling the Tosefta towards the Bavli. We try not to do that. We'd rather look at it sort of independently. In this case, the Tosefta in the Tefus Vilna looks an awful lot like the standard Tosefta. Now, once you accept everything in the brackets, where they put that back in from, I don't know. I mean, it could be from the first printing of the Tosefta. Remember, the first printing of the Tosefta suffered a lot less of these problems, a lot fewer of these problems. In other words, he published the Tosefta from some manuscript or manuscripts, wasn't trying to level it towards the Bavli necessarily. So now we have to look at both the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. So let's talk about the Yerushalmi first. Avram, can I ask you to read the Yerushalmi version on the sheet?
I'm Rav Yehuda.
Right. Well, the Yerushalmi is the one thing that doesn't have the opening part, but that's really just the Mishnah.
Right.
You know, the Mishnah, the Tosefta, and all the versions quotes the part of the Mishnah that it's dealing with. We might call that the lemma, and then add to the comment. The Yerushalmi just quotes the story. I'm Rabbi Yehuda.
I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Besukasa
shel hileni. I'll say this one time this year. What does besukasa shel hileni mean? I know what it means, but that's a very strange form. You expect sukkah shel hileni, sukkas hileni. What is sukkasa shel hileni? What? I know, but you should. But you, most people don't notice they see it all the time. There's a term for this. It's called an anticipatory pronoun. Professor Shipman once explained to me, the thing about grammarians is if they see something puzzling and they invent a term for it, they're happy. Something like that, which is, anticipatory pronoun is all over the place in Mishnaic Hebrew, in Bavli Aramaic, even the Targumim, it varies. The Targum Uklis limits it to certain circumstances, other Targum use it more frequently. In Chumash, there are three that I know of. One of them is Yivi Eha Eis Trumas Hashem. Yivi Eha, he shall bring it. What's the it? Eis Trumas Hashem. The most famous one is the source of a great medrash. Bas Paro finds the Teva, and what happens? Vatiftach, Vatirehu, Es Hayelet. The medrash was bothered by the anticipatory pronoun. And what does it say? Rashi quotes, she saw the Shechina with him. Vatir Ehu? Es Hayelen, with the Yelen. Who's the Ehu? Who's the it? The answer is the Shechina. Right? That may not be Pshat. Pshat, maybe it's an anticipatory pronoun, but nonetheless, that was what was bothering the Medrash. And there's one other one in Chumash, in Parshas Matos. So it's all over rabbinic literature. How do you say Abaye said to Rava? Amar le Abaye le Rava. What's the lay? You've seen it all your life. You never thought about it. Amar le, he said to him, Abaye le Rava. Just say Amar Abaye le Rava. Right? But if you just intuitively respond, how do you say it? It's Amar le Abaye le Rava. It's all over the place. Ashkeche le Rav Ploni. Okay. So anyway, here the Yushalmi has Sukasasha Heleni Malka. What is the great significant meaning in this particular point other than you should pay attention to what you're reading? The answer is nothing. Okay? But the grammarians are now happy. Okay? I've even invented a term for something. I'm actually what is called a post-anticipatory pronoun for another occasion. Go ahead. So that was Sukasa Shel Heleni HaMalka. Okay. Any differences? There's a more obvious one, not a meaningful one, although one of you wanted to make a taina about it. The Yushalmi is the only witness that says Chachamim instead of Zakenim. What's the difference between a Chacham and a Zakein? Nothing. The Targum, what is the Targum of Chacham? In Unklus, it's usually Sav. Sava, Chachamim are Savaya, which means the elders. The Eretz Yisrael Targum of Zakenim is almost always Chakimaya, the wise ones. And you know Chazal's famous comment on it, Nei Seva Takum Adatapane Zakein. A Zakein is? A Zakein is? Ze Shekana Chachma. Another three things. Ze Shekana Chachma. To a great extent, it's Pshat, although in the biblical period, and maybe it should be true today as well, but it's certainly not assumed today, is that Zikna and Chachma go hand in hand. The best way of putting it is that not all old people are wise, but wisdom is usually found in older people. And while knowledge is sometimes found in younger people, wisdom is rarely found in younger people, because wisdom is the product of experience. There's only one, and the proof, how do I know that not all old people are wise, aside from looking around the world? How do you know? It's a pasuk in Tanakh. Elihu ben Barachel waited for Eov's three friends to complete their attempts to deal with Eov. And he waited. He said, I was younger than them, tzar no chili yamim, and therefore I held my tongue. But now he says, Amarti bishishim chachma. He thought that the chachma was found in yishishim. It was found in the wise, in older people. But he said, Achen hi rachi benosh. No, it's a spirit that occupies only certain people. Not all old people are wise, but wisdom is typically found only in people with the life experience. And therefore, this is the word zakein and chachma, chacham, are often interchanged. So for some reason, the Yushalmi here is the only one that has the nusach of chachamim. Fine. Velo amar adam davar echad mehem. Okay, fine. Amrulo, continue.
Amrulo, v'nei she'i isha v'ein isha mitzvah al
hamitzvah. Or probably mitzuva al hamitzvah. That's obviously not what the Yerushalmi doesn't mean what it says literally. There would be a tremendous kula. I could say, a woman reading the Yerushalmi, Yerushalmi says, I'm not looking at us in any mitzvahs. Yeah, that ham sandwich looks very good. So, anyway. Okay, fine. So, Nisha's not chayaves, obviously, mitzvah sasashis van grama, and sukkah is one of them. Okay, Amar Lahan. Imisham Raya, that's your proof that if your response is the Chachamim didn't say anything because she is an Isha, hello. The end. Now this obviously. So what is the point? That she had seven sons who were Tamid Chachamim. Very nice. Okay. Baruch Hashem. Kanai Nahara. Right. What's the point? That because therefore. If a woman is zocha to have seven sons as who are tamid chacham, she's now chayeves in mitzvahs. Presumably, a woman who volunteers to do mitzvahs, even when she's tatur, because she loves doing mitzvahs, she's more likely to tell me the children who are tamid chacham in Yirei Shemayim. But that's not, what does that have to do with anything here? So the Yishalmi doesn't finish the statement. I presume, although we have to talk about that, I presume it means, and there are two possibilities here. The one that everybody else has is that they were living in that sukkah. That's the one that makes sense. The alternative is, she had seven children with Amin Chachamim, and they would have told her also. But we knew that. The Chachamim entered there. That's not going to change anything. Alter?
I'll just use the word Adam.
What?
I'll use the word
Adam. Yeah, okay. As opposed to Echar Mehem.
No. Like anyone.
Anyone. The same thing. Mistama, the Yushalmi just doesn't finish the thought, but it's the same as all the versions of the Tosefta. It's the Bavli that goes in a very, very different direction here, Yehuda.
The Yushalmi is also the one who says, besides the Bavli, it says in the Shamraya.
That language is only found there, yes. But not in the same place.
It's in the wrong place.
Correct.
Because, they're responding, they're not trying to bring a Raya, they're trying to disprove his Raya. So.
You have to study how the Yerushalmi uses the expression. Right? The argument you might be making is that the Bavli might have taken those words and if it had them, or if the Bavli had the Yerushalmi and had its version, it might have taken the words the Mishamraya and put them earlier.
It makes more sense earlier.
I understand. So this is the problem. When you find two manuscripts and one of them has a difficult reading, one of them has a straight reading, which is the original? So just to show you that scholarship in some level is like everything else, which is you see what you want to see, there are two principles of scribal things. One is called Lectio Difficilior, and one's called Lectio Facilior. Lectio Difficilior means the difficult reading is the correct one, because presumably nobody would change it to that, and the easy reading was a correction. The alternative is Lectio Facilior, the easy reading is the correct one. The other one's just an error, because it makes no sense. So which one do you decide to apply? That's the problem. But I'm going to work with the assumption that usually Lectio Difficilior is the one I usually think to be most cases. You have to have a little bit of judgment. So if anything, it makes sense to see the Yerushalmi and change it to the Bavli, then it makes sense to see the Bavli and change it to the Yerushalmi, right? You're putting, the Bavli puts Misham Raya in the place that you expect it to be. Yes. In other words, for the Yerushalmi, it should have said Misham Dechia. Yes.
And you made this observation during Seder that the Bavli seems to be more thought out in terms of the questions than the Yerushalmi. Is that a general...
So, as a general rule, not per se in the Braisa, but this isn't actually true, I think, but it still illustrates an important point. Somebody once commented, if you took the Bavli and you stripped away the stem of the Gemara, it starts to look a lot more like the Yerushalmi. Now, from a literary perspective, I think that's true. From a substantive perspective, not necessarily. The point, though, that is still fundamentally correct is that the reason why the Bavli is so easy to read. Now, some people would contest that's the case. But when you've been learning Bavli long enough, I don't want to say Chas V'Shalom, you can read it like a novel, but you can read it pretty quickly. The Yerushalmi, I think even when you've been reading Yerushalmi a long time, it's constant. Yerushalmi doesn't spell, there's very, very small layer of anonymous material in the Yerushalmi. It doesn't really spell out everything. So in that sense, the Yerushalmi is not fully fleshed out. In addition, the Yerushalmi has this very nasty habit. The Bavli, when it presents a stira, it does not rest until it resolves the stira. The stira might be kasha, okay? Sometimes it's, between two braises. It might be a tifta on an amora, kasha on an amora. It might be an ukimta. They will spell out everything. The Yerushalmi might just say, mechalfa shitason de so-and-so, quote the other one, the end. No resolution. No attempted resolution. It just quotes it to okay. What are you trying to... your point out there's a stira. Can you help me here? But the Bavli, and the Yerushalmi just literally lets you run right off the cliff, and that's the end. It is so unsatisfying after you spent decades of your life learning Talmud Bavli. Finally, Yerushalmi, could you help me here a little bit? Could you tell me what you were thinking? When we do the reason I didn't start, I think I mentioned at the beginning. Normally when I do a sugya, I start with the Yerushalmi. Most of you, this is a younger shir than I've had in a while in terms of just the makeup of the Talmudim. It's a wonderful shir, but still younger and less experienced. And I was afraid to throw the Yerushalmi at you and just lose you in the first place, because I can get lost in this Yerushalmi. There are parts of the Yerushalmi that are almost inexplicable. There's one section which I still am breaking my head over it. I see why people, Brisker should like the Yerushalmi, because you could fill in almost anything you want conceptually in certain of the things. I understand its appeal, actually, right? You're being given, when the Bavli, the logic of the Shittos is spelled out for you. So this, I don't mean to say there isn't more conceptual work to flesh out if you want, but you're not dealing with a tabula rasa. Your tablet, your slate is not blank, right? But in the Yerushalmi, you have this, very ambiguous dialogue right after the first part. If you did the chart, if you looked at the chart, if any of you did that, on the sheets, by the way, the chart I gave you You probably don't realize why I gave you it. The Yerushalmi and the Irvin and Sukkah are virtually identical. And there's a reason I want you to realize that, to help you understand something about the Yerushalmi and Sukkah. But once you get past that section, all of that is in the regular Yerushalmi, the first section after that about Abayis being taller than 20 Amos and Mezuzah and so on is exceedingly inexplicable. There are parts of that are just like, the question's a very important question. I understand the question, I understand what the Yerushalmi's answering is so difficult. So anyway, but I would like to, call knock-knock to Rabbi Yochanan's Beis Yosef and say, guys, could you just tell us a little more about what was going on? What were you thinking? Because they were thinking, and they were bothered by clearly certain conceptual issues here, but they don't really spell out what they're talking about. So the answer is yes. You don't to an extent, the Brises and the Bavli may have experienced a little bit of editing. Consciously, unconsciously, I don't know. It might very well have been, in some cases, consciously, to sort of smooth them over. So yes, the answer is, the Bavli generally is going to read much smoother. Even if it's not always true in Brises, although often I think it is certainly true in the Shach HaTarya. Once you get to the discussion of Amoraim, it is much, much easier to learn Bavli because there is a Stam. There were editors of the Sugyos, and it was their job to flesh everything out. The Yerushalmi, you're often getting something closer to a skeleton, a bones, and you're lucky when you get the ligaments and tendons, but the flesh is often missing. Okay, fine. Anything else in the Yerushalmi? I don't think so. The Bavli is where it always gets interesting. Okay, Avram, go ahead.
Read the Bavli?
Yep.
Okay, so Kashi Kabbal and Malam asked from Amma, Sula, Rabbi Yehuda Makshir, Adarba Im Vithamishim Amma.
Okay, what's new here?
45.
Well, Rabbi Yehuda adds, and Rabbi Yehuda Makshir, if you had that statement alone, you would have said there were no limitation of height on the Sukkah. What's the limitation of height on the sukkah? The sukkah doesn't fall down. But outside of that, you can make a sukkah as tall as you like. But he says, Ad arba mechesh amama. So we spoke about this yesterday a little bit, right? In other words, it implies maybe there's a limit, or maybe it implies it's just a guzma. In other words, how many people built chamishim ama houses? Sukkahs, I mean, come on. I'm willing to bet you that probably the only structures in Judea in the first part of the Common Era, and any time before that, the only structures that were taller than 40 or 50 amos were fortresses. Temples, maybe fortresses. Are the walls of Yerushalayim even that tall?
Not on the hills.
from the ground, are the walls even 80 feet tall?
Maybe not in Yerushalayim, but I think in other places they're
on. So, anyway, so I don't know, but that is not a structure. That is not a height that almost anybody builds any structure. So this is not, so it could be, Abba Kishon means as tall as you like. Now, yes?
Say the first time it comes up is really good, the Yerushalmi already finished this discussion of what would be the Rishita's exact height limits.
We're not talking about being unfair here. We're talking about a Nusach of the Braisa.
The Yerushalmi mentioned here because the Rish talked about it, not because it's not mentioned.
The Yerushalmi, what?
The Yerushalmi already has talked about it.
About what?
About exactly how high would be who thinks you could build your circle.
Really? That's not correct.
I think it's at the end of the Yerushalmi. In the beginning, they talk about Barakatara and all the other sheikhs about the exact height.
They do not talk about how you can build your sukkah. It's not correct.
I'm talking about the Ulam.
Talking about the
Ulam. Yes. That's why I put those two sugyas next to one another. I want you to see. So this is the principle involved here is that what the editors of the Yerushalmi did, maybe because they didn't have much time to do anything else, or they weren't busy writing a stam, is that when a sugya deals with two mishnayos, let's say in two different places, they copy it in both places. And sometimes they left the signs intact. Sometimes the hasam and the hacha don't get swapped. Right? Sometimes you find that. That discussion about pischo shel ulam and pischo shel heichal has nothing to do with sukkah. It doesn't make sense, and it's a crucial point in the Gemara in Eiruvin. The transition point from Rav to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is the question of what is the function of the Korah? What is the function of the Korah, for those who've done Eiruvin, according to Rav? According to Rav, that the Machlokas of Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Nachachamim, what's the function of a Korah? No, 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 no. I'm sorry? I don't want to use the Bavli's term mechitza.
It's a separate different shoot.
I know. What does it create? No, I know the Bavli says that. It's correct, but it is. But what is it actually creating? No.
A doorway?
A Pesach. Right? Chachamim lalamdu al mipischo shel heichal, right? Because think about it, just from an architectural perspective. I got two walls, I stick a car on top. A Tzuras HaPesach is kanami, it's not, the walls don't count for the Tzuras HaPesach. But that's what makes it like a doorway. It may be, agreed, the Bavli will present the machlokas about Korah later, about Heker or Mechitza. So I agree, it may be the function of a Pesach in Shabbos is that it creates a fourth wall. I agree, but the point is, learning, and then Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak comes along and says that when the Braisa, if you didn't get this far, we're gonna do what we do Erevin. Those who got it, I'm just explaining where it's going now. On Daf Gilma and Aleph, when Rav Nachman comes says, long, you know, if not for Rav's comments, there's no stira in the Mishnayos. When the Tosefta says that the Chachamim say that a Mavoi, which is Gavah Me'esrim Amah, Yoser Mipischo Shel Heichal, it was just a simen. It wasn't that it's conceptually, it's not that it's learned from Pischo Shel Heichal, it's not that it's conceptually connected to Pischo Shel Heichal. You just want to remember, what did the Mishnah say? Well, think Heichal, because we all think of Heichal, we're always thinking about the Beis HaMikdash. 20 Amos, excellent. But it has nothing to do with that. And that's why the Gemara immediately says in Erevin, wait, you know, why is a sukkah psula above 20 amos? If a sukkah is psula above 20 amos because Rabbah, why does Rabbah say a sukkah is psula above 20 amos? What's lacking? A heker. You won't recognize the schach being there. So the Bavli asks, why do you have to tell us the machlokas twice? If the machlokas by Korah and reviewed the Chacham is about heker, so we know by sukkah also. Right. Why need the two Mishnayos? I'm not saying that question, the Gemara is a compelling question, but that's exactly what the Gemara has done. The opening part of the Sugya Erevin assumes that the Korah is a function of a Pesach. Call it a Mechitza if you like. And that's why Rav, where's the model of Pesach that creates a Mechitza? Heichal, Ulam, etc. Comes along, Rav Nachman says, no, what are you talking about? It's all about Heker. That's why I believe, anyway, it's clear to me that the Bavli, the Yushalmi and Sukkah, that whole opening part, until you get to the end of what I put in parallel columns for you, before I gave you the whole Yushalmi, that opening part is an Erevin, it belongs to Erevin. And especially the open, and then they compare Erevin to Sukkah, the Gemara makes, the Yushalmi makes the, alright, I won't say any more about the Yushalmi, we'll wait until we get there, but anyway, that's why I said Yehuda, they don't actually discuss it. Now, what Yehuda did get, what I wanted, but I didn't expect you to see the Yushalmi, is the Yushalmi does have a tradition about Rabbi Yehuda saying 40 or 50, and it even has, the Yushalmi has even 100, from Bar Kapara's name, about the Mavoi, not about the Sukkah. The Bavli, I don't know what the Bavli has done. I don't know if the Bavli has another Nusach of the Braisa. I don't know if the Bavli has imported those Braisos and interpolated into the Braisa about Sukkah as well. Right? Now, which again, only works really well if you're thinking, I mean, maybe it works according to multiple Shitas. But anyway, so that's a line out of Avraham Cheshimama is not in any witnesses to Tosefta, and it's not in the Yerushalmi either. Now, I'm not saying Rabbi Yehuda would disagree with that, but we don't know what Rabbi Yehuda would necessarily hold. But I will say that by Sukkah, there's no reason to assume that Rabbi Yehuda would establish a limit. By Erevin, at least there's a possibility to establish a limit, because if you're talking about the din of Mechitza, if it's supposed to have the status of a Pesach, then it's not min ha-nimna that you have established a limit, which he seems not to have a limit. He says 40, even 50. Right? What was the height of the Ulam? 40. Right, that's where 50 gets in your way. Okay, continue. Amar Rabbi Yehuda.
Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Masa behelenia malka belud shaisa sukasa kavoa yoser meesrim ama vayosipinim nifnasim viyotzaim lisham belo amru la davar.
So that's straightforward. Amru lo.
Amru lo misham raya.
That's a very strange formulation. Isha Haisa. She was a woman. As opposed to what? Now she's not? Now she's dead. Okay. As generally speaking, in halachic terms, whatever you're born as is what you are, unless you're an androgynous or a tumtum. But as a general rule, regardless of what the surrounding world says, gender is in halacha a physical construct. Yes, a biological construct.
I actually see this issue discussed. I post came asking if you can wear titties in a burial ground, only women are buried. They say that dead women are five, and say she's mangas. So it's only because she's alive.
Post-Kim? No. Nobody says that. Who are you joking? They talk about the issue. Yeah. I know. Nobody says dead women are high. This is Tisha's man grandma.
When they were alive, they were high.
Yeah. The dead women are high. This is Tisha's man grandma. This is why I can't wear Tisha's in the graveyard. It's still a little bit of
another reason.
Okay. You know, not everything that's printed in a sefer qualifies as an achron. So, all right. Anyway. What? Okay, enough. We're Mekai in the midst of Leitonus for today. Thank you. Let's move on. So, a problem is Isha Haisa means she's dead now. That's probably why it's in the past tense. Uptur Menasaka. So, Amar Lahem. And here's where it gets very interesting.
Amar Lahem.
Okay, she had seven sons. Now, the Bavli in its Nusach HaBraisa seem to have been missing the words Talmidei Chachamim. Now, it's not in our Nusach, and I assume what's happening in the Bavli is that they did either there are two possibilities. They either just, the two words got lost in transmission, or it's possible, although it's hard to understand, that the Bavli was looking at the Yerushalmi Braisa, which is truncated, as we pointed out. And Talmidei Chachamim, they assumed, or you might even say the following, the way this Braisa got from, if it got from, the Sugya got from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, was that the words Talmidei Chachamim got transposed to form the second sentence, Va'od kol ma'aseh lo asos ela pi Chachamim. Because if you don't, if you have those words, Shiva banan Talmidei Chachamim, so a Talmud Chacham, virtually by definition, is what? It's a Gadol. Now, sometimes, I don't know, the Vilna Gaon might have been, you know, a big Talmud Chacham by the time he was six. It's possible. But it's fair to say that if Eleni Hamalka had seven children, one of them might have been, maybe, one could have been a level of Vilna Gaon, but clearly, Shiva Banan Talmidei Chacham HaYila meant they were Gadolim. In which case, you can't start to talk about, oh, but a katan's patam asukah, but a katan atzarach shein atzarach le'imo, and if there are seven, there must have been at least one who was old enough, and so on. So the Bavli's discussion cannot happen if you have the Yushalmi statement, if you had the Tosefta the way we have it. It cannot happen. B'ha Yushalmi Nesocha, we understand what Rabbi Yehuda's response was to the Chachamim. He said, forget Halani Malgo, she's Tura, she had seven sons who were Talmidei Chachamim, which meant they knew the halacha, they observe the halacha. If you know all of Shas, but you're over Averis, you don't observe it. We wouldn't call you a Talmud Chacham. I wouldn't, at least. So her children are Talmidei Chachamim, which means they know the halacha, they observe the halacha, and they were living in that sukkah. So that should be the end of the discussion. Okay, and it is in the Tosefta, and probably what the Yushalmi intended. But when you take out that last word, there's at least some degree of ambiguity. Now, I wonder whether or not the Nusach and the Yerushalmi becomes what we have in the Bavli. So if you take out Talmidei Chachamim, you put it at the end, she had seven sons, and she always followed Talmidei Chachamim. So now the question is, what does that have to do with it? So the answer is, well, the sons, I mean, it still remains the same thing, by the way. It's still, the point is still the same in the Bavli, except for the Bavli. In other words, in the Bavli's version of the Braisa, the point is still the same. She had seven sons, and therefore they had to sit in the sukkah. The way the Ode Koma Selo Asal Pi Chachamim, so now the Bavli has to explain that by saying, ah, what's the Va'od? Because whenever you have a Va'od, what does Va'od always mean? The Gemara does this all the time. It does it, sometimes the Gemara will quote multiple psukim to prove a din. Not halachic medrash, but sometimes the Gemara will be quoting, it's more often an agada, where the Gemara will quote a pasuk or something, and then it will say Va'omer, and then Va'omer. And what is the Bavli going to ask? It might go on there. Now, why do you need the second pasuk? What is it adding? So they'll say, because if you only have the first pasuk, you would have said the chitema x, the omer, the second pasuk, and so on. How many pesukim that you have, typically two or three pesukim. So they're doing the same thing to the Braisa here. What's the point of the v'od? She had seven sons. Children have a mitzvah in the rabbanim to sit in the sukkah. So v'od, my v'od, because you might have said that a katan is, that she didn't keep the rabbanans. So here, as you know, to conclude sort of this part of the discussion, clearly the Braisa and the Bavli, something has happened to it. I don't know whether or not it's an interpretation of a difficult Braisa in the Yerushalmi, missing that last line. I don't know if the text, if the tradition got garbled in transmission. I don't know if this is a completely alternate tradition, not dependent upon the Tosefta of the Yerushalmi that the Bavli had. I have no way to know any of those things. I can only sort of highlight the differences and why the Bavli discussion goes where it does. At the end of the day, In terms of the Braisa, there's no nafkamina between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. It merges the same thing. Rabbi Yehuda claims that Heleni HaMalka somehow made use of a sukkah gavoh me'esrim ama to help people who were bar chiyuvas be yotze their obligation. And the Chachamim, we don't know what the response is. Presumably they would say, didn't happen. Ohei dvar me'olam. Yes, Noah?
Rabbi Yehuda now also here says, Tamidei Chachamim. Do you think that he had his version of the
Bavli? He has Shiva Banim. That's very odd. The question, what is he, but he must quote the continuation, no? Now, by the way, just as another work to be aware of, and Mr. Sellis has been kind enough to share with me a link also, I'm happy to share the file with you, although somebody should confirm him. He thinks it's with permission. I have the volumes at home called Tosefes Rishonim. Let me just supplement a little bit about, I spoke about Zuckermandel's Tosefta, I didn't speak about Lieberman's Tosefta. So Lieberman's Tosefta is often considered one of the gold standards of scholarship. And the Beis Medrash actually has Lieberman's Tosefta Sekhe Pshuta. The joke is it's usually on the shelves wherever I'm sitting. A number of years ago, when Beis Medrash opened, I sat upstairs. That's where they put the Tosefta Pshuta. So now they moved it down when I moved down several years ago. But the Tosefta Pshuta is an unbelievable work. The way it's only done through Bava Basra, starting from the beginning, starting from Zerayim. If you look, I should have brought in a copy just to show you. If you look in the Tosefta, there are two volumes. There's the text volume and the Perush volume. The text volume has four parts. The text on top. Below that it has a Mesoras HaShas, wherever the Tosefta is quoted. Elsewhere rabbinic literature. Then there's a Shinir Nischos. And finally at the bottom there's the Perush HaKotzer, the Biur HaKotzer. A short Perush. So if you're trying to just cover a lot of ground in Tosefta, you can make use of that. The other volumes do not have the text of the Tosefta. They are actually, I think the way he does it is every perek, I think he numbers the lines, starting at the beginning of the perek of Tosefta. When you go to the companion volume, you have to go to the, you have to skim until you get to the right perek of the right Mesechta. And then he marks it by the line numbers, and then he has his Perush, where he quotes everything on. He quotes Rishonim, who quoted in the discussion, and what version of the Bavli Yerushalmi had, etc., etc. So it's an unbelievable work. And Lieberman's Bekias was something beyond this world. They say he had a photographic memory. Rumor has it that when classic scholars were looking to find out whether a passage existed in Greek or Latin literature, they would actually go ask Lieberman. Those of you who don't know his background, he was a product of the European yeshivos. He was a gonotzim, a smicha from Europe. He was actually a cousin of Rav Moshe and the Rav. He came here. He had originally been in Eretz Yisrael, an official, Machon Harry official, which I don't know if it exists anymore, but it would be in the Gris Institute or in that. But whatever it was. And then when he came to America, he went to JTS. There are stories, I don't know if they're true, about the Rav Moshe trying to persuade him not to. And he served in a certain sense as the machshir for JTS, which is why his name was, sort of blackened in the Orthodox world. He was kind of, I would say, blackballed. I know the Rav still maintained a relationship with him, as probably did some other people. So his work on Tosefta is just a reflection of his keen erudition and his enormous knowledge of texts and Svarim. He wrote a work called Tosefes Rishonim. It's two thick volumes. And Tosefes Rishonim is the Tosefta that the Rishonim had in quote. Because Rishonim quote Tosefta a lot. You have more of it, I think, in Zeroyim and Taros, where the Mefarshei HaMishnah, like the Rash, quotes the Tosefta. If you're going to write a Perush on Zeroyim and Taros, the Mishnayos, outside of Brachos Anida, especially in Taros, where all you have is a Bavli and part of a Yerushalmi Anida, there's only one way to write that Perush, and that's starting with the Tosefta. But even in Zeroyim, the Rash's Perush is full of the Tosefta. And so Lieberman wrote the Sefer called Tosefes Rishonim, which has any given Tosefta where it's quoted in the Rishonim, particularly if it's not just a verbatim, exact quotation of what we have, if there's a discussion on it. So the place to look, in light of whoever asked me that question, Noam, was that your question about Rabbeinu Hananu?
No, I'm sorry.
So Noah, the place to look in general, if you want to see any discussion, would be in Lieberman's Tosefes Rishonim. So now I'm just going to take a quick look, because you said Rabbeinu Hananu. The question is, so he doesn't have that Girsa Nabavli. He quotes it from the Yerushalmi.
Oh.
He says, after he quotes the Braisa, Yerushalmi. Amru lo mesh isha mitzvah mitzvahs, amru lahen alo shiva banam hayo tamidah chachamim. So basically, he then goes on. He doesn't talk about the, you know, that little piece, which is not a crucial even for the Bavli's discussion. The Bavli just wants to prove that one of her children at least was chayiv in sukkah. And once you accept that premise, mitzad chinuch be mitzad being a gadol and talmid chacham, it's the same thing. So I don't know. I will pretty sure the following. I didn't. Next piece of information. Celis was kind enough to send me, but in this case, I reinvented the wheel myself. I will try, if I have a chance over the next few days, to generate it. Is a synoptic edition of all the Kisvei Yad on the first parak of Sukkah. So there is. I don't like the way the one he sent me. I don't find that so easy to use. It's in a spreadsheet, but I actually will take it from my spreadsheet, transform it into a Word file, and you can print it, or we can print a copy or two, leave it, you know, by my makom, and if you want to check something in the Kisvei Yad. I'm pretty sure, I didn't recall, it's a couple of months since I did it and started the beginning of Sukkah. I don't think there are any significant shinin neschos in the Bavli. Now, that doesn't prove anything, in the sense that a lot of our Bavli manuscripts are sort of the same family. I suspect, however, anyway, that this is not a later interpolation of the Bavli. It's too creative and too not. It's not a natural mistake that a scribe would make. But I think that the discussion of the Ketanim, which Rabbeinu Hanano skips over because it's not important, all it has to do is demonstrate somebody else in that sukkah was chayiv in sukkah and they would not have violated the halacha. And then you can talk about, as Rabbeinu Hanano basically says, whatever sukkah is psula has to be the kind of sukkah that Hileni would have sat in, that they'd be having this discussion. So, but he's quoting the Yerushalmi. Okay. So in that sense, no chiddush here. Okay. Fine. So coming back to our thing. So that's all there is in this case. So we're not going to, in this case, you can simply note that there are real differences between the Tosefta and the Bavli's version. The net outcome in the end is not that significant. There are other cases where it's actually of much greater significance, but at least I want you to understand methodologically how to deal with the Tosefta. And I think that we have dealt sufficiently with that. Any questions about it? About Tosefta in general that I might be willing to answer now if I know the answer. Okay, so the bottom line is the Chachamim tried to bring a raya. Rabbi Yehuda tried to bring a raya from the story of Hileni Hamalka, that she sat in a sukkah that was above, taller than 20 amos. And at the end of the day, and there were people in that sukkah besides Hileni who would have been chayavim in sukkah. And nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda claims the Chachamim entered there and they didn't say a word. And they would have had, because she would have listened, and she would have had the sukkah redone, and the fact that they didn't say anything means there was no problem. That was Rabbi Yehuda's attempted raya. We don't know exactly what the Chacham's response would be. Yehuda?
Just about general Tosefta, do we ever pass in halacha solely from Tosefta?
The best one could say, and I don't know this with any certitude, is that if the issue is not discussed in the Bavli, and it doesn't contradict anything in the Bavli, I could see someone, and Rishonim do make use of the Tosefta, but usually as a perush. I wouldn't be surprised. Someone like the Rambam might have occasionally passed like Tosefta. Again, not if it's not against the Bavli. I think we've shown that methodologically will state that if the Tosefta is against something in the Bavli, they call it a Mishadeshta.
But if it's just
Stam.
But if a Rishon has a Tosefta that has something that's not in the Bavli at all, but like it's possible he'll pass
it. It would not surprise me. I haven't collected any cases. It would not surprise me at all.
So it is an authoritative.
It's regarded as authority, but I would say the same thing. Let me say the same thing about the following. One of the burning contemporary issues, which I will not talk about lest I create trouble, but the question of srara for an isha. It is a sifrei. It's a medrash halacha on dvarim. The Rambam had it almost certainly. The nosei kelim of the Rambam and most other rishonim probably didn't have it. Nosei kelim are wondering where the Rambam got his din from. Had they seen our version of the Sifrei? It's not just in the Medrash Tanan of the Rambam. It's in our version of the Sifrei. At least I've seen. Maybe it's some manuscripts, yes and no. They wouldn't have asked the question, where did the Rambam get this din from? You know, he didn't make an extension from Ger. The Sifrei made the extension from Ger. Ger and Isha are disqualified from Malchus and from any Srara. I don't think in the halachic discussion, if to the extent there is a halachic discussion of how do you paskin like the Rambam versus the Tosfos and other Rishonim on the issue of Srara, and Ramosha's tshuva, for example, where Ramosha thought Meikara, then really you don't hold like the Rambam. He doesn't say, unless Ramosha wasn't aware, nobody says, oh, it's a Sifrei, end of discussion. Rambam had the Sifrei, game over. Right? theoretically speaking, although I'm going on a limb here, I don't know, if the Rambam had a different nusach in the Bavli, and we rediscovered a manuscript, I'm not sure it would matter either. Because Klal Yisrael accepted the Bavli to a great extent as we have it. But bottom line is, it's probably pretty rare, but I think that you would, in theory, it would be a smach. But I don't think, it's not binding in the same way that the Bavli is binding. Could I see a Rishon using it as a proof in adopting a Shita? Probably, or Achron, probably you have it, yeah. If I recall correctly, Shechter once quoted an Avni Nezer, who said, what's the din of Refuah, Xeris Refuah on Yom Tov? It doesn't say anything in the Gemara. Now, one could argue, there's no, you know, on Shabbos, if you have a minor headache, you're not supposed to take, let's say, most posts would say you shouldn't take aspirin or ibuprofen. If it's a minor headache, if you're not nofel mishkaf, why? It's part of the Xeris Refuah, for a mechosh ba'alma. The reason behind it is, Shema Yishachek Samamanim. So the truth is, on Yom Tov, that Xera really isn't so shayach, because it's technically mutter to grind up spices on Yom Tov if you don't use the kli, which is meyuchad lekach. So the question is there a Xeris Refuah on Yom Tov? So if I remember correctly, I thought Rosh Hashanah quoted that, Avni Nezer, who found a Tosefta that said, you're allowed to engage in Refuah on Chol HaMoed. And he wanted to be medayik from that you can't engage in Refuah on Yom Tov. So, you know, if I'm remembering all the pratim correctly, that sounds like someone who wants to use the Tosefta as a proof. But again, it's not against the Bavli, it's filling in a lacuna, a kind of an obvious lacuna. Okay, was there another question back there somewhere? Zach, you had a question.
Oh, yeah, actually, I was just kind of wondering why we wouldn't say that just the fact by using Kim Nippon's and the Yotin Mitzvah means, you know, it's a sukkah, they had, she had food, drink, whatever. Is the going in there? They were using it as a
sukkah. So maybe they held they didn't want to be nana, you know, from anybody else. They were all like Pinchas Ben Yoyers who went in there and Sonia Matanos Yichya. I think that's an interesting observation, but
even all the Brises don't seem to take that as the answer.
Correct. No, but everybody assumes that can somebody give a better answer to that question actually? Much easier. Yeah. You don't have to say that. They're holchei derech, even not the mitzvah. They were. Look, this is an issue in sukkah. Al pi din. If you go to work, and let's say you don't have a sukkah available to you. There's not a sukkah readily available. So some people, the makbid, they take only shahakol, they take, you know, fruit, whatever. So no isser in eating, you know, sudah shalom ha-melech. But the reason why it's not also, why is because holchei drachem are peturim bayom. Why? Because the whole point of sukkah is teishu kein tadurim. Right, I normally eat breakfast in my house. I eat supper in my house. So it means on sukkahs, in my normal things, I'm supposed to eat breakfast in my sukkah. I'm supposed to eat supper in my sukkah. Where do I eat lunch? Well, I eat lunch either in my office. I eat it in the Heights Lounge. But why? Because I'm a holchei derech bayom. I don't during lunch. You know, I don't. You won't see me disappear on a Monday or a Wednesday. Run to the parking lot, get in my car, go home, eat lunch, and come back in. It's a very expensive lunch too with the tolls. You can assume I can manage the time factor, right? Why? Because that's not the way people function. You eat lunch on the go, in effect. I may sit down, but you know, on the go. So sukkah is no different in that regard. So if you don't have a sukkah readily available, it's not that, and you don't have a sukkah available, I'm not going to discuss readily, but you don't have a sukkah available to, you don't say that you can't eat bread. Of course you can. Teishu kein tadur. Holchei derech are peturim bayom. When they stop at night, the mechuyav have a sukkah like they would do if they were home. Unless they're holchei ledvar mitzvah and they don't have a sukkah available. Right? So that's why Pashas the Chachamim weren't chayim, because they were holchei derechim. There's a Gemara later, actually. It's going to be quoted in the Baal Hamor, I think, about the, one of the Rishon, maybe the Melchamas quotes it, about, maybe they don't quote this Gemara, about two tell me there was a machlokas, about a particular arrangement of schach, whether it was kasher or pasul. And these two tell me the Chachamim came, visited the third one who was Machshir, and he said, and they said to him, ah, you were Moda, and he ate their sukkah, and they were Moda. He said, ah, you Moda to my Shita. Let me tell you where the Gemara is. Hold on. It's Yuramid Beis. It's the question of if you have Noye Sukkah, which are more than four Tvachim, you have beautiful, let's say, sheets that were decorated, and you hang them below the Schach, within four Tvachim, everybody agrees it's Kosher. It doesn't pass the Schach because it's Lenoy. More than four tefachim was a machlokas. I think maybe up to 10 or something. So Rav Chista and Rabbi Brahuna said it's pasul. Rav Nachman said it was kosher. So they came to visit the Reish Galusa, Rav Nachman's shver. And Rav Nachman you know, gave them a place to sleep in the sukkah with the noi, which was more than four tefachim away. And they didn't say anything. So he said, you back out of your opinion. They said, no, we're shluchei mitzvah now, v'turim min ha-sukkah. So that could be, thank you for asking the question, a good ha'ara. I think that that's actually the correct answer. Not that they didn't eat like Pinchas Ben Yair. Yes.
It hard to say that on the one hand, the Gemara is saying, there's a woman and she's Keturah from Sukkah, but yet she really wants to do the mitzvah. But then we're going to say, when it comes to the Chachamim, no, they're Pazer because they're Olchei Derech, but they don't want
Why
to
not?
Go eat the Sukkah.
It's perfectly reasonable. They weren't eating Bekeva anyway. They come by to visit. So maybe she offers them an apple.
If she's Keturah and she's going to the extent that she wants to sit, she wants to do mitzvah, even though she's Pazer, why don't we carry that svara for the Tzomei Chachamim?
Because they are doing the mitzvah. In other words, the woman here is doing the mitzvah in the context where a man would be chayiv in that circumstance. But the chachamim themselves are men who are chayiv mitzvah sukkah, but there's no chayiv under those circumstances.
I'm not seeing it.
Okay. Yona?
Also, to make it a non-issue, is that
okay, it could be also that they just step in, say hello, how you doing, how are the kids, how's your husband, yeah, it's possible. Okay, Morty? Tough crowd.
Why is there no issue of if she has a sukkah that's not kosher, that people will learn from that to make sukkahs like that?
Look, if you want to say there's a better argument to be made, and Noah was sort of making this argument, not exactly, which is, once she's going through the trouble of building a sukkah, why would you build a pasul sukkah? And that's the question. Like, why do such a thing? Right. Oh, because if the sukkah's taller, it's more tzanua than if it's less tall.
You make a kosher sukkah, and then when you have your little arba alarma chamber...
No, we're talking about, just forget the Bavli's... Teretz, right, for the other Amorim, and for the Yushalim and Tosefta. Why, in other words, why would she build the Pasul Sukkah? And why would the Chacham say, listen, you're not Mechuyev, but you know, might as well. You know?
It could be that in the case of Eleni Hamalka, it's the Teshu King to do that, like, a tall sukkah, or like this, like, elaborate, gorgeous sukkah is, you know, palatial, because she's used the palaces. It's like kind of all about
this. I know that it's odd. It's odd. Like you're going, she's doing the mitzvah sukkah. Why did she bother to build a sukkah? Why bother building a sukkah? The smart women know when the weather's a little uncomfortable, but you know most of us don't want to pot ourselves on mitzvah. It's like you eat outside, enjoy.
Right.
Your mitzvah. That's when the feminists disappear. When the weather's a little iffy in the sukkah, it's like. Yehuda?
Maybe she wants to make a public statement that she keeps sukkah for all her subjects.
Even more so.
They won't know it's puzzle, so they'll see.
Because they're goyim.
Yeah. Why? Right. They won't know it's puzzle, they're goyim. And then she'll see this, and they'll see that she's eating the sukkah.
But shouldn't she want to show the universal mitzvah that's meant for Gayim, Akasha, or Sukkah? Okay, enough said. Let's take a look at the Gemara and Erev in a little bit. Okay, a few minutes and... Okay, thank you very much, Avram. And I should start writing down who's reading here for me. Oh, Netano. Yeah. Right, it sounds like Eser Amos is a Pirtza, more than Eser Amos is a Pirtza. Less than Eser Amos is a Pesach. Does Rabbi Yehuda have a shear in width? I'm sorry, the Chachamim. Never mind, scratch that for the moment. Okay. Fine. Tanan Hassan. Okay. I have a question for you, a question that I didn't ask you, but I'm wondering if you wondered about. which one of these sugyos came first? The one in Sukkah or the one in Erevin? Well, what? Well, we don't know how the Misaflis were composed. There's something that's... I don't know the answer to the question. But there's something that strikes me. I mean, it might have been just composed once for both, but I'm struck by the form. I would have expected... Here it says, Maishna Gabe Sukkah, the Tani Psula Vagabe Mave Tani Takanta, and it says the exact same thing. The exact same thing, Maishna Gabe Sukkah, Tani Psula Gabe Tani Takanta, in Sukkah. I would have expected that this is the Ha Ha Hasam problem. I might have expected that one of them, I'm not sure which should be, that one of them would come first. So I don't really know. There's no dead giveaway because it doesn't say ha ha hasam, right? Had it said maishna ha ha detani x, or maishna hasam detani y, had it said the same thing by both, that would have been a dead giveaway, which was the ha ha, which was the hasam. But I am struck by the fact that I would have thought that this is the original, actually. Because you quote Tanan Hasam Sukkah, and now you say maishna gabe Sukkah detani psula. Don't know. It doesn't change anything. It happens to be that the Ushalmi presentation in Erevin clearly the first one, and Sukkah is secondary. Let me make one. There is one other reason I have a suspicion that this originates in Erevin. Of the two Gemaras, which one of them discusses the link between Sukkah and Mavoi? In the Gemara in Erevin and the Gemara in Sukkah. The relationship between Sukkah and Mavoi. Which discusses it? Erevin. Right? Not immediately, because they get sidetracked here into the Pesach question, but later they start to engage in the comparison. Stuff that's not done in the Sukkah and Sukkah. Which makes me think that actually that's setting the table for later in the Sukkah here in Erevin. And in Sukkah, they just sort of copied over the opening part. Again, it doesn't change anything. It's just a historical composition question. Daniel.
Say that the Arabic want to discuss, it's more likely to discuss Mavoi and Sukkah, which they could go on a tangent discuss, but if it's Arabic, then it's very much more likely to discuss the actual topics of Arabic.
No. Mavoi is the topic of Arabic. Yeah. Sukkah is the topic of Sukkah.
And the
two Mishnayos present a machlokas that is strikingly similar between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. And the question is, after noting the literary similarity, is there any discussionship of the relationship between, not the literary relationship, actual substantive relationship and connection between Sukkah and Mavoi? Now, the Yushalmi has it in both sugyas, although that one happens to belong to Yushalmi Erevin. That's clear. But the Bavli in Sukkah, there is no further discussion about any conceptual connection, similarity between Mavoi and Sukkah. In the Erevin, in the Bavli, there is. You have to get past Rav's discussion. Rav is a sidetrack. And once the Amorayim bring it back, once Rav Nachman Yitzchak comes back, now all of a sudden the focus is on Sukkah and Mavoi together, right? Sukkah and Mavoi, which are exactly 20 amos in height, and so on and so forth, both being a heker. In other words, the whole discussion of a commonality and connection between Sukkah and Mavoi, substantively, not literarily, is an Erevin. This opening paragraph is just a discussion of the literary similarities and the choice of formulation. That appears in both places. Which makes me think, and that really is the Hakdama in Erevin to what comes later in Gemamot Aleph. And makes me wonder whether or not that fact this is all the original, and Sukkah was just an afterthought, so they brought in that part. I mean, it is odd, by the way. One thing is odd. You think that all the dinim of Sukkah belong in Masechah Sukkah. But one din of Sukkah, which does not appear in Masechah Sukkah, is Chalal Esrin. What if the gap is 20 amos exactly? Does the tzchach have to be within 20, or it can't be more than 20 amos higher than the floor? Right? That discussion is only in Erevin Daf Gimel. It's not in Sukkah, which is interesting. And that is an independent topic in Sukkah. You don't have to talk about Mavoi for that, and yet the Bavli doesn't have that at all in Sukkah. But I think that probably the original is the original part, Maishna Mavoi, Maishna Gabe Sukkah, Maishna Mavoi, is actually original to Erevin, for what it matters. Yeah, here.
I think you're also trying to figure out, based on where the question might be, a more natural question. Meaning, if the answer assumes, let's say, that the Lashon and Mavoi is unusual, that Mavoi should say puzzle, then reading the Mishnah and Erevin, I would say, hey, wait a minute, this is weird, shouldn't you use the other Lashon from Sukkah? And then I would have the discussion. So based on which assumption each answer of the Gemara assumes,
you might think that one, you know, the question is something more natural.
Maybe, maybe. I, you know, it's possible, but as soon as the Gemara sees the two, I understand what you're saying. I don't know if that is this positive or in any significant way. But I hear what you're saying. You're arguing that when you look unless of course what's driving it is the recognition of the contrast. In other words, if either one, in other words, the Gemara may not be bothered initially by the fact that you use psula or that you use teach takana.
Right.
It's just bothered by the difference. Now, once you say that, we say, okay,
all the other
which
Mishnah that are different. It doesn't say, you know, hadas, it doesn't say other Mishnah that are also different formulations. It only says the contrast between these two.
Well, that's because this is the obvious one. They're both things that are placed above 20, at 20 amos, right? We don't say a hadas that's bigger than 20 amos. It's no good. Okay.
It's not a Mishnah.
So that you saw Tosus, I assume. Tosus talks about why they don't...
It's not a Mishnah, right?
No, it's not. No, no. Dina Mechanica or on the Bryce and Shabbos. Okay. Fine. So read one more line. We're going to stop with this. But this is where the Bavli gets sidetracked in Erevin. Amar of Yehuda Marav. So there is a brisa that led Rav to think this way, the Tosefta, which the Gemara is going to later challenge. But what makes the problem for Rav is Rav states it explicitly. Rav says that the basis of the Machlokes is whether you see the Pesach HaUlam as your model, whether that's really called the Pesach, or you learn only from the Pesach HaHeichel. We know that the Pesach HaHeichel is definitely a Pesach because all over the Torah it says Pesach Ohol Moed. The question is whether the Ulam is a Pesach. The Gemara does quote a pasuk, by the way, El Pesach Ulam Habayis. You know where that pasuk is? Nowhere. Tosa says the pasuk doesn't exist. Okay, it seems to be an amalgamation of things. Anyway, we'll stop here. Tomorrow, we'll pick up from here and try and get through Gemara Eivrit and then get to the Yerushalmi. Zach, get a question? No, because firstly, the Ulam part is not in the Bryson.